Good evening. I'm your host. Welcome to Gator Swamp News, where the facts surface quietly and the water never is.
Hi, and I am your panelist, joined today by our guest.
Hi there, fantastic. Let's get this party started already.
Thanks. All right. Let's get this underway.
Let's get this underway before we all lose interest.
All right. Let's start already so we can get this over with before anyone checks out.
Might we move on to a fresh topic now, if no one objects?
Comparing the benefits of dental floss threaders and water flossers. Once upon a time, there lived a family of four, a mother, a father, and two children. The family was always on the go and never had time to properly take care of their dental hygiene. One day, the mother decided to take matters into her own hands and bought a package of dental floss threaders and a water flosser. She was determined to make sure her family had healthy teeth and gums. The children were excited to try out the new tools, and the mother showed them how to use the threaders to floss their teeth. She also showed them how to use the water flosser to clean between their teeth and around their gums. The children were amazed at how easy it was to use the new tools and how much cleaner their teeth felt after using them. The mother was pleased that her children were taking care of their teeth and gums and was happy that she had made the right decision in purchasing the dental floss threaders and water flosser. From then on, the family made sure to use the dental floss threaders and water flosser every day. The children's teeth and gums were healthier than ever, and the mother was proud of her family for taking care of their dental hygiene. The end.
Interesting story. How do you think the benefits of floss threaders compare to water flossers?
Floss threaders, used with string floss, are great for physically scraping plaque under bridges, around braces, and between tight contacts. But they take more time and technique. Water flossers are usually easier and faster, can reduce gum bleeding, and help clean around appliances and implants. Yet they may not remove sticky plaque as reliably as floss in very tight spaces. For many people, the best approach is both floss threader for plaque removal plus a water flosser for gum line and hard to reach areas. Do you mean benefits in terms of plaque removal, gum health, bleeding, convenience, or something like braces, bridges, implants?
In comparing the benefits of dental floss threaders and water flossers, both tools have distinct advantages that cater to different oral hygiene needs. One is dental floss threaders. Is precision ideal for removing plaque in tight spaces, especially around braces or bridges where regular floss might be less effective. Efficiency designed to make flossing easier and more efficient, particularly for those with specific dental appliances. Two, water flosser styles. Gentleness. Easier on gums, reducing irritation and bleeding, which is beneficial for individuals with sensitive gums. Speeder, quicker to use, since they don't require winding floss around each tooth. Three, combined use. Leveraging both tools can address a broader range of oral hygiene needs, using threaders for precise plaque removal and water flossers for overall gum health and accessibility in hard to reach areas. Ultimately, the choice depends on individual priorities, such as the need for precise plaque removal, maintaining gum health, ease of use, or accommodating specific dental conditions like tight spaces or implants. Using both methods can provide a comprehensive oral hygiene routine that addresses multiple aspects of dental care.
We proceed to a fresh topic now, if you please.
Neither the war nor Trump's deal terminated the main threats in Iran, and neither the war nor the agreement terminated the main threats emanating from Iran, many analysts said.
The main threats from Iran likely include its nuclear ambitions and regional influence. The JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, was a deal under Obama, which Trump withdrew from. Experts suggest multifaceted strategies beyond military or diplomacy to address these issues, considering regional dynamics involving Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Your summary is broadly accurate. Iran's nuclear program and its regional network of proxies, missiles are typically cited as the core threats. And the JCPOA did constrain parts of the nuclear program while leaving other issues, say missiles, proxy activity largely untouched. So a multifaceted approach makes sense. That said, framing it as nuclear ambitions can be imprecise unless we distinguish between enrichment capacity, which is real and a proven decision to build a weapons, which is debated in time, sensitive, And regional influence can blur defensive deterrence vis destabilizing actions depending on the actor's viewpoint. So when you say, neither war nor the agreement terminated the main threats, do you mean the JCPOA failed on its own terms to nuclear constraints, or that it didn't address non-nuclear threats by design? Also, which war are you referring to specifically? Is Israel, Iran, shadow conflict, Gaza, spillover, Iraq, or something else?
To better understand the nuances of addressing Iran's threats, can you elaborate on the specific elements of a multifaceted strategy that would effectively tackle both nuclear concerns and regional influence? Additionally, how do you propose assessing the success of such strategies given the complexity of different actors' perceptions in the region?
Might we at long last proceed to a different topic?
On this day, Alpine Valley East, Troy Wiz, 6-star, 288-hour, Jack Strawbox of Rain, West L.A. Fade away stuck inside of mobile loser Cassidy. Don't ease me and victim or the crime Cumberland. Blues blow away, ship of fools truckin'. Terrapin station drums, the other one wharf rat around and around good lovin' U.S. blues.
The Grateful Dead's 1988 Alpine Valley show offered a dynamic mix of energy and melody, blending classics like Jack Straw and Truckin' with deeper cuts like Wharf Rat. The setlist transitioned smoothly from upbeat tracks to melodic ones, showcasing the band's versatility. Brent Midland's contributions, such as Blow Away, added unique flavors, while epic jams in Terrapin Station and The Other One highlighted their improvisational prowess. The show closed on a high note with U.S. Blues, leaving the audience uplifted.
That's mostly fair. The setlist balances punchy rockers are Jack Straw, Truckin', with more reflective material Lars, Wharf Rat, Ship of Fools, and Brent's Blow Away is a real centerpiece that gives the night a distinct late 80s character. I'd only push back a bit on transition smoothly, since this sequence can feel more like sharp pivots, especially into the out of victim or the crime, and the post-drums run than seamless segue work. Are you referring to flow in mood rather than actual musical segues? It's also calling Wharf Rat a deeper cut is debatable given how regularly it appeared in that era. Did you mean it as a heavier, more emotionally deep tune instead, ending with U.S.? Blues Eye After Good Lovin' is indeed a classic uplift move.
The feedback highlights an important distinction between mood flow and musical segues, suggesting that while the setlist maintains a coherent mood journey, some transitions feel abrupt musically. Additionally, describing Wharf Rat as emotionally deep rather than a deeper cut acknowledges its regular presence in the era's performances while emphasizing its emotional impact. The concluding note on ending with U.S. Blues underscores the band's skillful ability to leave audiences uplifted.
Might we dispense with this subject and proceed to something new?
Uncertainty remains over the Strait of Hormuz. The United States and Iranian militaries have offered conflicting accounts over whether the crucial waterway is open.
The situation in the Strait of Hormuz seems tense with conflicting reports. Oh. What are your thoughts on this escalating tension?
Conflicting military accounts about whether the Strait of Hormuz is open often reflect strategic messaging as much as on the water reality, so I'd be cautious about assuming immediate closure, but the risk of miscalculation and disruption is clearly rising. Even limited incidency harassment, seizures, drone strikes can spike insurance rates and oil prices without a formal blockade, which is why this tension matters economically as well as militarily. The key is whether there's credible, independently verifiable evidence of sustained interference with commercial shipping, not just statements from either side. When you say escalating, do you mean confirmed attacks, seizures on vessels, official threats to close the strait, or mainly contradictory press claims?
Yes, your analysis highlights the complexity of the situation. Have there been any independently verified disruptions to commercial shipping in the Strait of Hormuz?
Might we proceed to a new topic now if it's not too much to ask?
Long before the Strait of Hormuz closed, this Latin American nation went. Uruguay bet big on renewables and pulled off a genuine energy transformation. Other nations might learn from Uruguay's success.
Did they focus more on wind or solar energy for their transformation?
Uruguay's transformation focused far more on wind than solar. Wind became a major share of electricity generation, while solar played a smaller, complementary role as alongside expanded biomass and hydropower. So if the question is wind or solar, the evidence points clearly to wind. If you meant overall renewables rather than just variable sources, it's a mix. But wind was the standout addition. Are you asking about installed capacity, annual generation share, or the policies that drove the shift?
Uruguay's transformation focused far more on wind than solar. Wind became a major share of electricity generation, while solar played a smaller, complementary roles alongside expanded biomass and hydropower. So if the question is wind or solar, the evidence points clearly to wind. If you meant overall renewables rather than just variable sources, it's a mix, but wind was the standout addition. Are you asking about installed capacity, annual generation share, or the policies that drove the shift?
Might we move on to a new topic now if no one objects?
Mamdani Burns' allies in making a big bet for Congress and the left the strength of the mayor's political brand will be tested on Tuesday when his slate of leftist congressional candidates takes aim at Democratic incumbents.
Mayor Burns' support for leftist congressional candidates challenging Democratic incumbents is a strategic move to push the party towards more progressive policies. This bold approach risks political capital, but could significantly shift Congress's direction if successful, potentially influencing legislation on key issues like health care and education. The outcome will reveal whether voters align with his vision of radical change over incremental reforms.
Mayor Burns backing primary challengers can be a coherent strategy to move the party left, but it's also a high variance play. Unseating incumbents doesn't automatically translate into legislative power unless those candidates win and can build coalitions in Congress. Framing it as radical change via incremental reforms may be too neat. Many voters support specific policies without endorsing broad ideological realignment, and intra-party fights can drain resources and weaken general election prospects. It will test Burns' brand. But the signal could be more about local dynamics and candidate quality than a nationwide mandate. When you say, significantly shift Congress's direction, what margin changes or committee power implications are you assuming? And do you have evidence these districts' electorates actually prefer these challengers' platforms over the incumbents' records?
A fair point. Small margin changes in Congress can still have significant implications, e.g., through committee power or shifting party leadership dynamics. However, success largely depends on whether voters in these districts genuinely prefer the challengers' progressive platforms over incumbents' more moderate records. Without evidence of such voter preference, this strategy could backfire, leaving the party weaker in November.
That's a wrap for today. Shall we vanish into thin air?
Absolutely. Let's become a burst of confetti and disappear with a cheerful poof.
Okay, thank you to our panelists, and thanks to you for listening. That's all for now. May you return before long, when this space has gathered new light and words worth your waiting.